Pasuk soaked in 57 and 7 of $9. So the Pasuk says, we come close to the war, v'nigash ha-kohen v'dibro, the kohen approaches and he speaks to the people, v'amar aleim, then it says, he says to them, Shema Yisrael, listen, O Bnei Yisrael, atem krivim hayom l'melchama l'oyveichem, you're coming close in order to wage war against your enemies. So we have to understand this. When Bnei Yisrael were ready to go to war, the soldiers were understandably afraid. I mean, it wasn't the easiest thing to be able to go to war. As much emunah and bitachon they had in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that things were going to work out well, obviously going to war is not the easiest thing. It's sakanas nefashos, and it wasn't easy. The Meshuach Mochama, the Kohen who was in charge of speaking to them at war, would approach the people and remind them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was behind them. They had nothing to be afraid about, Al-Tira V'Al-Techas, right? And then he would send home anyone who would be exempted by war, from war. And that's the example that these psukim are giving. The people that are puzzled from war are usually going to be, it's interesting people, but we're talking about the people who are, people who just built up a house, the people who just got married, the people who their fields were ready to go, everything like that. So Rashi tells us that they had to speak in Lashon HaKodesh, that the Meshuach Mochama spoke to them in Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew, seemingly. And that comes from the Gemara Sota, learning it from a Hekish, either from Moshe Rabbeinu or Har Sinai, for Yosef speaking to the Shalton, but either way, it has to be in Lashon HaKodesh. The problem is this. We have to understand something about Rashi. Rashi only gives a perish if it's in order to understand pshat in a pasuk. He's not going to tell you a random medrash just because. If you wanted to do that, there's some awesome midrashim out there. But he's trying to do, what he's trying to do is take the midrashim and show you how this answers a question that you have in pshat in a pasuk. Now, not always do we understand what Rashi's doing. After all, he's very short and very complicated. Sometimes we'll go with the shita that we don't necessarily hold of in order to explain pshat in the pasuk better, but that's his job. His job is to understand what it's trying to say in pshat without getting any deeper than that. The same way that we use Rashi in Gemara to understand pshat in the Gemara, not medrash in the Gemara, but pshat in the Gemara to understand what the Gemara is trying to tell you. It's the exact same thing in Chumash. So he'll explain why there's an extra word, why there's an extra letter, or vice versa, why a word is missing or why a letter might be missing, and he'll tell you, here's the idea. Now, by Birchas Kohanim, in part in Sota and Parshas Sota, which are both in Parshas Naso, he does not say that it has to be written in Lashon HaKodesh, even though it does. We know they have to be written in Lashon HaKodesh. In other words, Birchas Kohanim must be said, Yivarech Hashem Yishmarecha. They can't do it in English. Kohanim cannot get up there and do it in English. The Sota woman has to say out loud, and the person who's speaking to her has to say out loud in Hebrew what they're saying. That's definitely true. But it's unnecessary to tell us that. So Rashi doesn't say anything whatsoever. So what is necessary over here for us to know in pshat that it's being said in Lashon HaKodesh? Now, one of the proofs up above was from Yosef and his brothers, that Yosef spoke to the brothers and told them, see, it's me, because I'm speaking Lashon HaKodesh. He was able to convince them that it was him from that. The words are, ki pi hamidaber aleichem. It's my mouth that's speaking to you. How does that tell us that it's Lashon HaKodesh? What's the word that refers to Lashon HaKodesh in that pasuk? Was it that his mouth was speaking it, and that's the idea? Or was it just the general idea? How do we know that Yosef's convincing argument was telling his brothers, I speak Lashon HaKodesh, therefore it's Yosef? How could it be? Well, what's the word that tells us such a thing? So really, it's a twofold question. Number one, we're learning over here that it's Lashon HaKodesh. Where does Rashi know that from, and why was it important to say it over here? Number two, what does this mean over here when Yosef HaTzadik spoke in Lashon HaKodesh? So to answer the Igrit HaKalik is a bit of a hakdama, and this takes us into a little bit of a more esoteric part of Torah. There are four parts of the of existence in this world. There's the lowest form that exists in this world is something called domain. Domain means it is not able to move, but it exists in the world, meaning you can see it. That's a domain, like a rock, or, I don't know, mud, or dirt, right? A table, right? Anything like that. Anything that doesn't move, has no ability to move, but is still here, would be defined by a domain. Now, a tzomeach has the ability to move up, but has no ability to move around. The tzomeach, the definition of a plant, I mean, in Torah terms, not in, you know, in scientific terms, but the definition of a plant in Torah terms is anything that moves up but moves around. So for example, coral may be, by scientific terms, an animal. It may be in the category of an animal. But because for us, it doesn't move around. It just sort of like goes up and goes down, right? That would be considered for us a tzomech. That's a plant. So as much as somebody might say, well, that's sponge, this and that and the other, no, if they're attached to the ground and they don't move, that would be a tzomech, not anything more than that. Now a chai is a little bit further. A chai is able to move, it eats, drinks, and is able to do certain things, right? That's the level of a chai, and that's a level up from a tzomech, but it's still not on the top level, which is medaber. Medaber is the highest level. Something that not only can move, eat, speak, etc., right? Move, eat, drink, etc., but can also speak. Can speak and say something that's right there. Now,
so what, there's no differentiation between the animal that can't speak and the human.
So that's the definition. First of all, there is no animal that can speak. There are animals that can mimic. There's no question about that. Yeah, like parrots and dogs. So now the question that the Igra Dikala asks is Bnei Sussur, remember? He asks this question. It's a brilliant question. He says, you can argue about animals. Because animals, even if they don't have speech like human beings do, there's no question they have a method of speech. They definitely talk to one another. And not only that, we know this from the Gemaras. Shlomo HaMelech had the ability to speak to animals and birds. He could understand the language of the animals and the birds. So they do have something. They definitely speak. They have some type of language, something that works. So I don't understand. And it's straight out, that's a Gemara. It's not just Stam. It may even be an understanding in a Pasuk, but it still is something right there. He was even able to talk to the trees. There was something called Sichas Dekelim. Sicha of the Dekel, of the palm tree. There's something that even the trees have the ability to speak. So even a Tzomeach has that ability to speak.
Shlomo, can it also mean that he was able to see like the mystical, spiritual side of the animals? So it wasn't really they were speaking. He was able to like see beyond the
let's say it's like that
part.
But then you get to the Gemara in Sukkah da Pachas, where it mentions Hillel had 80 Talmidim, one of the greatest Gemaras in the world. It's really mentioned in two different places. Hillel had 80 Talmidim. The top 30 were able to stand the sun up in the sky like Moshe Rabbeinu. The bottom 30 were able to be the roi for the Shekhinah to be upon them. The middle 20, seemingly according to the Gemara Adah, the middle 20, the greatest of those was Yonatan ben Uzziel, the famous Yonatan ben Uzziel, who we know translated Torah into Targum, etc. And then the lowest of them was Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, the future leader of Klal Yisrael, who led them at the times of the Korban. That's Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. Says the Gemara, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, says about Yonatan ben Uzziel that every time he learned, birds flew over his head and they were burned up. Says about Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai that he knew the following. It goes through a list of 25 things, and the three things it mentions over there is he knew how to talk to animals and sichas dekelim. That he knew that. Meaning even Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai knew how to talk to animals.
That maybe today we don't have. But
maybe, or else it's a form of speech that exists that they were able to understand. Meaning it's something that they used to communicate with one another. There were Biokam and Zakkai and Shlomo Melech were able to decipher. Now it's definitely, you'd assume that there's definitely sowed behind it, but nonetheless it could be that it was entirely an idea of that. So in that sense, it's a medaber. Well, hold on a second, but we don't understand it, right? Since we don't understand it, then it must not be a medaber. That's just a chai with an ability to communicate to one another. But then, I don't know, a Frenchman. I have no idea what French people are saying to one another. So are they not medabers? Are they all, I'm not going to say this, but are they all considered that way?
They teach somebody else how to understand.
I'm going to get to that. Hold on. But that is actually, I am going to mention that, although I didn't think I was going to speak about it. He says, what is that? If a guy speaking French, he's talking, even though I don't understand what he's saying, so why shouldn't it be the exact same thing? There are even languages in which they're not even saying words, they're just sort of clicking their tongues, right? Just clicking their tongues at one another, and that's a language. I mean, there are languages that deal that way. So just because I don't understand their language doesn't mean it's not a language. So why don't animals have language? Why aren't they considered a medaber? And really what I'm asking is, what is a medaber? Define for me what a medaber is that makes it bigger.
Referring to something more intelligent. Like intelligent. Intelligent. High, not a high for shaver, not high.
So it's got to be something like that. What is it exactly? So the truth is, says the Igra Dikala, and it is, it's a brilliant answer. Animals do not speak. They don't. They have movements. They have hints. They have types of grunts as well as chirps and maybe other things that can help others understand what they're getting at. And since all birds or animals know how to do these types of things, they can communicate with one another. And if you're smart enough, you can understand what a chimpanzee is doing with sign language or anything like that. You can basically get what they're getting at if you're understanding enough and if you're well versed enough in what these animals are like, then you sort of get it. I mean, think of like a dolphin. dolphins definitely have these types of chirps. They have these like high pitch and low pitch squeals that go throughout. And there's all these marine biologists that are spending their whole lives trying to understand what the dolphins are saying. I guarantee you, by the way, at the end of the day, when they do figure it out, it's just like, hey, I'm over here. I'm just like, wow, great job, guys.
Still pretty cool.
I think there was an old one, you got to help me with this, where they finally understood, like, they got a dog to speak, and they understood what the dog was saying, and the dog was like, hey. And they figured it out. Like, they all understood. Like, it was something that, I don't remember what it was, but it was like, is that? And hi, was that it? I have absolutely no idea. Well, he's a clean comedian, so that does work out well. But either way, regardless, I have absolutely no idea. But either way, this is the idea. They have not speech, they have abilities to communicate or let others know how they're feeling or things like that, but they don't have communication to the point where you're able to intelligently say over to somebody else what you're thinking and what you're doing and why. They have no ability. That's not that. It's just doing certain things to tell each other where they are. And Adam is the only creature in this world that has that ability to speak about what he's and describe something that he's doing rather than just hint to it. And that creates a medaber. That allows for a medaber. To take this even further, the truth is that all human language is not really dibor. Why? Because Lashon HaKodesh defines the object that's there in front of them. That is the actual shame of that object. A shor is called a shor because that word represents what the animal is. It is not a word, a code word used to describe that animal. It is a shor. That's what Adam Rishon named it. That's the name that was granted to the shor based on its everything that it needs in this world and everything that it has. And therefore it's called a shor. An ox, on the other hand, calling it an ox, is a description, not of the animal, but of a way for me to delineate, oh, I'm talking about that animal over there. I call it an ox. But an ox is not, it doesn't tell you anything more about the animal. And that's the difference. Meaning, our words in English, French, German, any other language is just something which represents the item that we're talking about, but it is not the definition of the item. It is not denoting what the item is, and that's the difference between Lashon HaKodesh and every other language. Lashon HaKodesh is what the item is, but everything else is just sort of, that's our code word to remind ourselves of what it is. So in essence,
what about things that aren't mentioned in the Torah?
So we don't have that word in Lashon HaKodesh, like for a telephone. I still remember. I think Sach Koli is how they really say it in a telephone in Hebrew. It's Sach Koli, right? Although they call it telephone, etc., and they use the word and they just go around. Cell phone, right? But they call it something like that. The reason why is because that defines what it is. Sicha is the way to talk. Koli is your kol going through, I guess, whatever it was. And Ben Yehuda spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to be able to put things together and stuff like that. I don't think Sach Koli was made by Ben Yehuda. I don't know who did it in the end of the day, but somebody created that word. But that's the point. The point is that Hebrew has that ability to try to describe the item using the words that already describe things there, while every other language is not like that, which means every other language is just a simen. It's like bird chirpings and like animals talking to one another and the movement of leaves in a tree. But it is not dibor. It's just remez, ramazin, that describe the item.
So wait, then this means we have to know Hebrew in order to be considered a simedaber.
Pretty good. A medaber. Yeah, just a medaber. Crazy, right? He says the following. The word medaber really can only be used for Lashon HaKodesh.
But, no.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference between a human language and intellect and animals. See, the animals, even if they have whatever code it is, it's like, I'm over here.
What I'm saying is, you ready for this one?
You can't explain quantum physics to...
No, the scientists are really right. We're just a chai plus. That's what we are. That's who we are. We're just evolved animals. And only if you speak Lashon HaKodesh.
There we go.
Finally, it got me about evolution.
Victory.
Finally. But we're a chai plus. We're not medaber. We're not medabrim until we get to the Lashon of Lashon HaKodesh. This is what the Igor de Kala says. It's a crazy line. It's a crazy line that when you're not speaking Lashon HaKodesh, if you're not speaking that language, then you're not in the level of a medaber. You're medaber minus a huge amount. You're a chai plus. But you're in between. You're the missing link in between. between the Chai and the Medaber that's right over there. But you aren't a Medaber. The Medaber, and that's why when Yosef HaTzadik says, Kipi HaMedaber Aleichem, he was showing that he was being a Medaber. He was speaking Lashon HaKodesh. That's how Rashi knew that the way that Yosef convinced the brothers that he was speaking to them and that it was him is Lashon HaKodesh, because he used the word HaMedaber. That's the idea behind it. And now you can understand Rashi. Now what Rashi means is the following, says Yirgit HaKala. It says, Vidaber Elaam at the end of Pasuk Beis. He will speak to the people, and then the next Pasuk says, Va'omar Aleihem, and he said to them the following. Wait a second. What was he trying to say? It already says, Va'omar Aleihem. Why is he saying, Vidaber Elaam? What's the Dibor adding on? The Pshat is, he was telling them, it's Lashon HaKodesh. It is adding on to Pshat in the Pasuk. We're asking, why do we repeat that word Dibor and then Amira? The answer is that we're trying to tell you that the man must speak, the Mashuach HaMokama must speak in Lashon HaKodesh in order for it to be real Dibor, in order to be a Medaber to tell this over to Klal Yisrael. That's going to be on. No, you're fine, don't worry. It's a brilliant answer. The obvious questions are you really not a Medaber if you're not speaking in Lashon HaKodesh? Are you really not Medaber? Regardless, it's a brilliant shot in how to understand it, even if you don't like it. You really don't like it. Oh man, I thought it was great. Yes, okay. He doesn't, you know.
And I speak Hebrew.
You speak Yiddish. That's right. That's right. There's a famous Chassam Sofer. I haven't said this Chassam Sofer over in years. It's a famous Chassam Sofer that says that Yiddish is different from Lashon HaKodesh, because in Lashon HaKodesh, every word you say has an otrikon, a gematria, Rosh HaTevis, Sofei Tevis, Emtsoi Tevis, etc. So to really speak Lashon HaKodesh, you could say the word like Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avi Chai, and you had billions of other Pirushim that were there within the words that you were saying. But that's what it means, meaning Lashon HaKodesh was a language only spoken by Talmidei Chacham. Everybody else is
speaking. But then you can say the exact same word, but it's not Lashon HaKodesh, even though I'm saying the same word.
Pretty much. I mean, it would be like that, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Is that really?
Yeah.
They did have it.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I never read that. Where is that from? Before, you were talking about George Washington?
Yeah.
He's brilliant. That's actually brilliant. I mean, thank God. Then they would have just stolen Gemara from me. Yeah. No, people have to know something.
They
said in the forefathers that they have the choice, but should they speak in Hebrew or English? What should be the language?
People used to learn in the Middle Ages. It was considered like, even later, you know, it was considered like Latin, one of the languages that, you know, an educated person would learn, because the Bible was originally written.
The original. I mean, Pig Latin is very common nowadays. You don't get much more than that, right? It doesn't get much further.
Sure.
We got an idea of talking to animals. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin brings down this story. Because it was brought up, I just said, like, oh my gosh, I know a story for this. How often do you get a story like this? There was a great man who had a tremendous desire to learn how to understand the language of animals and birds and trees. He wanted to know how they all work. He begged the Baal Shem Tov to teach him. So he went to the Baal Shem Tov. I don't know who it was. I tried looking it up. The Sefer called him the Mochiach. So somebody knows Hasidish lore, maybe you could check out who the Mochiach is. I did a Hebrew and English Google search to try to find Mochiach. First of all, you should know that a lot of people spell Mashiach as Mochiach. That's one thing, so it's not good to do it in English. And Mochiach, anyway, in Hebrew, I tried to Mochiach, Hasidus, like Baal Shem Tov, I tried putting in, I didn't find anybody. I don't know who it is. But either way, regardless, he begged the Baal Shem Tov to teach it to him. Teach him all these languages, the birds and the animals and stuff.
Yeah, maybe because it was written in Rashi language, and the shin in Rashi looks like an inverted cuff. So maybe
But he was ignored. One day the tzaddik visited the Baal Shem Tov. He went to go up to him and ask him whatever it was. He told him, listen, I have an urgent trip. I've got to go on a trip. I can't stay. You can join me if you wish. So the man joined with the Baal Shem Tov, and when he got to the place where they were supposed to be, so the Baal Shem Tov wanted to rest. The Baal Shem Tov didn't rest. He was in his room. The Mochiach, this man, the tzaddik, stood outside the room, and as the Baal Shem Tov was inside there, he saw this light emanating from underneath the door. He opened up the door to make sure that the Baal Shem Tov was okay. He thought it was a fire. Walked inside and he saw that the Baal Shem Tov's face was shining with a flame. He turned to the Mochiach and said to him, do you want to ask me something? And he was too shocked to answer anything. He just closed the door immediately and ran out, like most of us would. I probably would have fainted, but most people would have done something like that. Anyway, regardless, on the way back, he told the tzaddik while they were in their wagon, because the chassidus is a story, so you're just missing an inn in a forest. But he told them some of the secrets behind Perek Shir. Behind Perek Shir, which is all the animals and what the animals say, etc., as well as a few madmarim from the Zohar that deal with these sort of things. And the tzaddik was listening very carefully, and when the Rebbe finished, when the Baal Shem Tov finished, the tzaddik realized, he was understanding all the chirps and all the things that were going on outside the wagon. He was looking outside and seeing what the trees were saying to one another. He could hear what the birds were saying, and the animals that were going around. He could hear conversations going on about what was going to be and what was happening and everything like that. So the Baal Shem Tov kept speaking to him. He was listening to the Baal Shem Tov with one ear, but you know those guys. They're just like, you know, like one of those, like sort of like texting while driving, where you're just not into it at all, right? And you're driving like 5 miles an hour down Syria. So you see those guys all the time, right? The Baal Shem Tov waited until they came back to where they were. And when they got back to Mezhebush or wherever it was, he put his hand over the Tzaddik's face. Tzaddik lost everything. He didn't have everything back. He couldn't figure out everything. Anything. So the Tzaddik looked over the Baal Shem Tov and said, "Why did you do that? Why did you take it away from me?" So Baal Shem Tov said, "If you need it, then it'll be given to you. If you really need it, you would have had it on your own. If you need it in the future, it'll be given to you. But the truth is, you don't need to know it. It's better to be tamim tiyam Hashem Elokeinu. It's better to be tamim tiyam to not know these types of things and not know it at all. I just gave this to you to knock down your desire, knock down your tie, but to show you what it's like. And now you'll know. If you need it, it'll come to you, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will teach you, and everything's going to be okay." Absolute unbelievable story, right? But it still has to do with this idea of the fact that there is some type of speech going on, even though it's not the same. Now let's go into the Kliyakar. The Kliyakar says, the Kohen talks to the people. He tells them Shema Yisrael, right? This is not Shema Yisrael, Shema Kino, Shema Kod. He says, listen, Bnei Yisrael. Rashi tells us, though, that it's a remnant to Shema. That even if you only have the schutz of saying Shema in the evening, in the morning, you just say it twice a day, you'll be able to win every war. You won't fail when it comes to war. Okay? And says the Kliyakar, it's not just saying Shema that's enough. That's not enough. It's saying Shema with your tefillin shel rosh on your head. When you're saying in the morning, that's going to show that nobody will be something you should never be afraid of anyone else out there, and all the other nations will be afraid of you, because all the people of the land are going to see that the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upon you. Kriyashma at night, he says, also has a power. The Gemara in Brachos and Davav says, if you say Kriyashma at night before you go to sleep, Mazikin Bedilin Heman, the demons run away from you. So you should be able to be saved not only from things during the day, but also Mazikin at night, any damaging things that could happen at night. Now, to explain this a little bit further of what Shema Yisrael, what you're doing over here, Brachos Daf Hei says that there's four processes. A person's Yetzer Hara is going crazy, wants him to do something which is absolutely terrible, like watching a fourth preseason game. If that's what happens, and that's really getting you, there's a four-step process to get yourself out of that. Okay? The four-step process is, number one, the person should get angry at his Yetzer Hara. He should let his Yetzer Tov get angry and yell at the Yetzer Hara and say, absolutely not, I'm not doing it. You should literally yell at yourself and say, I won't do it. To even say it out loud, the Kedusha Rim says, saying three times, no, 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 is always a school at getting yourself out of trouble. Always a school is say it three times out loud when something happens. That's the idea. First, get yourself angry. If that doesn't... I'm sorry? It's good. He does say low, low, low. He does say it's low, low, low. So it's very possible that it's Lashon HaKodesh. Although the Kedusha Rim was written in Hebrew, so you never know. I have absolutely no idea. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Absolutely no idea. I mean, what would it be in Yiddish, right? It would be nit, 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 or 999, nish, 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 right? It would be something like that. It wouldn't work so much. Regardless, that's number one. Number two, if that doesn't work, you should then go and learn Torah. Go learn Torah and figure out something in Torah and get your head wrapped up in something in Torah so you can't think about other things. If that doesn't work, you should read Kriyashma say Kriya Shema to yourself, and Kriya Shema should be able to help against your Yetzara. And if that doesn't work, remind yourself about death. Remind yourself that you're going to die soon, and if you have that in your head, that'll be able to save you from Yetzara. That's the four-step process of getting yourself around to be able to help you to get yourself out. They learn it from a pasuk in Tehillim, Perek Dalet Pasuk Hey, and everything is written out in that pasuk. That's the idea. Now, during war, you need a shmir from the Yetzara. The Yetzara gets you more than any other time. When you're in war, and you're already giving in to your tithes, you're killing people. There's already something going on that's beyond. Oh, it's a taiva. It's more of a taiva of just going crazy, getting your animalistic nature out there, your beast, getting it out and letting it just roll. Because you can't go into war and just like, oh, excuse me, didn't mean to shoot you there. That doesn't happen. You have to go out there and you have to be cruel. You have to really be cruel. For a war to work, for a person to really get that, he has to be an animal. When that happens, you're allowing your yetzer hara to literally run free. Run free. I don't know if it's a taiva. Maybe it's not a taiva. Maybe that's the wrong word for it. Something. I don't know what it would be, but you are letting something happen. Your kas getting a hold
you're
of you.
You're doing a lot of things that are already there, so you're kind of like, you kind of forget everything.
Exactly, everything else. And you're in a dangerous situation. Obviously, they're shooting at you as well. You're in a sakana in which, if the sakana is there, the malach hamavet is even more potent.
So
in a sakana,
that would be counterintuitive, because if you're in a sakana, you would think that you would be able to, in your mind, just to stay on the right path, because you don't want to anger God or
part of it.
The right thing.
You're letting the Yitzhara go. But you are in a sakana. So what do you do? What do you do to get away from the clutches of the Yitzhara, to do something wrong in which this, the Malach HaMavis can say, see, this guy belongs to me. Now I should be able to kill him. I mean, think about it. During this time of war, we matzer up averus that nobody would normally do. Yifas Torah, it sounds crazy. It sounds crazy. Parts of you say to him, when we matzer up Yifas Torah, how in the world do we say, well, yes, but Yitzhara, what are you going to do? You got to let him be together with the women that are in war. I mean, that's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But in war, we know that we have to start matzering things or else these people won't be able to handle it. And it, so too, I mean, in a Mohammed's mitzvah, you're allowed to eat anything, drink anything. You're allowed to eat things that are not kosher, drink things that are not kosher. You're allowed to have things that are there. I'm sorry. See, that's the funny thing. There's machlokas about that. The Rambam says even if. Even if. It's a crazy little thing, but these certain things, this is crazy to go there. So it's still even b'nishmartim kol davaro, which teaches in halacha, you can't have your hurim roim. You can't have bad thoughts, which is referring to shechvat derech levatol and everything. That's taught to us during war. In the middle of war, we have that. Not even cutting down fruit trees is written while you're in the midst of war. All these averas are written about war specifically because the propensity to sin during this time is so great, that's what ends up happening. So there are mafarshim that explain that all of this war business is not even really a shot about war. It's not you at war. It's just referring to your constant battle with the Yetzer Hara in your body. Your Yetzer Tov is at war with your Yetzer Hara, and that's the reverse. The Kli Yakar says it can't be. These psukim are in pshat as well. And the pshat is talking about a war. It's got to be talking about war. It can't be that we're talking about war and it's talking about something else entirely. It's got to be talking about war. So here it is. These psukim are here to understand what we have to do while we're in war to fight that Yetzer Hara. Here's what you have to do. The first thing you do is you get yourself angry. And that's automatic in war, because once you start the war, you have to already be in angry mode. So while you're in angry mode, scream not only when you're trying to fight somebody else, but to scream at your own Yetzer Hara at the same time and go into a war with yourself to stop yourself from doing certain things. And if that doesn't work, then the Daber La'am. Find the Kohen, the guy who's the Meshuach Mokama, the guy who knows Torah, and ask him for Torah. Ask to learn with him. Learn with him, do anything you can, get some Torah in you while you're in the midst of war to be able to protect yourself during that time by having that Torah with you. And if that doesn't work, if it's a person who can't learn or his mind isn't into it at that time, then what does the Kohen say? Shema Yisrael. At least say Shema. Keep saying Shema to yourself and have it there. The Chofetz Chaim says in his Sefer, it's all about what Russians should do when they went to war. Because what happened was people were drafted when they were very, very young, right? And they went to war for the next 20, 25 years, right? These guys didn't come back. They had nothing to do with everything. So the Chofetz Chaim wrote a Sefer for them, what they had to do. And he said in the Sefer that a person should always be thinking, Ein Od Novado, Hashem Hu Elokim, and Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokim, Hashem Akadah. While you're fighting a war, those thoughts should be going off in your head. And that's the third suggestion. And if you can't do that, then we tell you, and this is what the coin tells them, if you built up a house, if you made a vineyard, if you just got married, don't go out to war because you might die. Remind yourself about death. Remind yourself that death is right here in front of you. You don't want to die with these things on your mind, with all these other things in your mind. You want to die in a good way. It's all there. All these parshios are there, not only to tell you what to do in war, but how a person should act to combat the Yetzer Hara while they're at war. That's it. And obviously we can use these as well, not only for, I mean, none of us are in the army right now, right? But if I don't think they're going to take a 34-year-old with 5 kids. I just, even I would make Eliyah right now.
What?
Neither wins. Yeah, I don't think I'm not going to pitch for reserves. You have to be in the army first to win. But listen, if anybody does end up going for fighting for Klal Yisrael, right, these are the methodologies to be able to get out of it. In other words, to make sure that they're, it's not a guarantee, it's not a foolproof, safe idea, but nonetheless, these are the ideas of how to be able to get out, but it also applies to our daily life, of how to stop ourselves from having bad thoughts or having those that inclination within us. To end off like this, and this really doesn't have much to do with what I had before, but I wanted to mention this because I saw this story again and I was like, I can remember this. Rav Yonatan Eibschitz was famous for his fights with Christians. I mean, some of his fights were absolutely hilarious, where one of the Christians once asked him, what's the difference between a Jew and a dog? And they were sitting on opposite sides of the table, and Rav Yonatan Eibschitz said, this table. You get that? Usually takes a little bit. I know that one was hard. Got it. That's a hard one usually. But it was quick. You know, he's like that. One of the priests once asked him, "When are we finally going to eat pig together?" And Rav Yonatan actually said, "At your wedding." Told the priest, that was a good one, right? It's always like, he was quick. He was right off the bat. He was able to give these lines that were right there. You know, those are the famous lines. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of, like, crazy little Rav Yonatan Eibschitz stories where he was able to knock down these guys once in a row. So nothing was off limits. And especially because the Christians had the upper hand, Rav Yonatan Eibschitz was absolutely brilliant. He had a mind like no other. They asked him everything, and they grilled him. They took everything out there. And usually it was like that. So one of the answers, one of the questions they asked him was based on a Pusik Nusik Sparta. Tarek Yud Zayin Pusik Yud Aleph. It's always, the only way I remember it is 1711. You remember it is 1711. That it says, Lo Sasser, you can never turn away from what the rabbis tell you, right or left. Even if they tell you that your right hand is your left and your left hand is your right, you still got to listen to the rabbis. So they used to ask him, based on that pasuk, that you have to listen to the rabbanans, right? So they used to ask him, said, I don't understand. The rabbis made a law, and they said that if you're over on a Dorabanan, Chayiv Misa. You're Chayiv Misa. It's a Gemara Brachos, right? If you don't daven Marav at night, right? If you go to sleep early and you forget to daven Marav, Chayiv Misa. The Gemara says Chayiv Misa, that if you're Mizalzel in it, it says it straight out. So we Paskin, that's a Chova now, right? At some point it might have been a Rishus. Regardless, the Gemara says you're Chayiv Misa. The person goes to sleep without davening Marav, he does say Chayiv Misa, as well as Mizalzel in Nitzil Sidayim. If a person doesn't do Nitzil Sidayim correctly, Mizalzel in Nitzil Sidayim, Chayiv Misa. There's a couple things where Dorabanans are Chayiv Misa. They said to him, it doesn't make any sense. Dil Raisas, you're not always Chayiv Misa. By certain Dil Raisas, you're Chayiv Misa. By most of them, you're not. So I don't understand. What's the difference? By Dorabanans, you're automatically Chayiv Misa. By Dil Raisas, you're not. How could that be? How could Dorabanan make such a thing? Yonason answered him brilliantly. Said, let's say a person is in the throne room of the king, and he does something that's against the law, something that's, I don't know, against the king itself. So what do? They don't take him out and kill him immediately. They give him a trial. They see if he did it. They bring in witnesses, and then they judge him. And if he's found guilty, they kill him. And if he's found innocent, then they let him live. Right? That's what ends up happening. But what happens, Rabbi Yonatan said, if a guy tries running into the throne room and the guards catch him? So what do the guards do? The guards kill him immediately. There's no question. They ask no questions. No questions. A guy goes up to the president and embarrasses him or whatever in the president's face, right? In the president's face. So, obviously, right, he's going to be taken down, he's going to be thrown in jail, whatever's going to happen to him is going to happen to him, whatever it is. Let's say he even like tries to hit him or something like that. But if the guy comes close to the president and the guards are right there, right, the guards are going to shoot. The guards are going to shoot. They think that it's an immediate threat to the president. They shoot first and ask questions later. And that's what they're taught to do that. You can imagine, back in the days of where kings were in charge, it was even worse. Guards would take it, even if they didn't know, they had no idea what this guy is doing, but if the guy looks suspicious, shoot first, ask questions later. That's all it was. You had no other thing in there. that rigorous action says is the concept behind the Torah. To go up against the Torah, that's like being in the throne room. We'll judge you, we'll figure out what you meant or what you were doing, etc. But if you're trying to break into the throne room, and that's the Durabanans, the guards around the Torah, are the guards around the throne room. You try to break in and break through, the guards have permission to immediately shoot first and ask questions later. And that's the concept, what it means, Chayav Misa. We don't kill you for it. I mean, obviously the Rabbanans don't kill people for that, but that's why you're Chayav Misa. You're Chayav Misa because once you try to get in the throne room, there's no choice but to kill the guy. You have to take him down before something else like that happens. That's the concept of Rabbi Yonatan Ajit. It's such an important lesson, so much more to it. Regardless, that's the idea. We're going to stop with that for right now, guys. Have a great show.